The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Beyond and hello and welcome to a very special Marvel Spider-Man 2 spoiler cast. I'm joined by Jada Griffin, Josh Du, and Senior Creative Director at Insomniac Games, Brian Inahar. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Friendly neighborhood game developer.
Yes, I am.
So before we get into this, we're going to spoil everything. Nothing is out of bounds. We're going to talk about all the stuff that happens in the game. So hopefully you've had a chance to play it. If you haven't, go play it. Just go do that right now. Push pause on this. Come back. Watch, listen, whatever. Let's talk about Venom. I just want to kick this off. I want to get into this right out of the way. You teased Venom at the tail end of the first game.
Sure did. Mm.
Did you feel like that came back to bite you at all? Because I feel like that could have been, like, that was, everyone saw it coming. Everyone sort of knew it was setting it up. We always knew it was Harry, which is like, I feel like that's kind of the...
Well, I don't know. I've read people thought it was going to be Peter. Some people thought it was going to be Miles. Some people thought it was going to be I don't know. We all watch the MCU movies, right? They tease things in their stuff and they commit to stuff. I think in many ways, maybe it was kind of a way to say, hey, you're going to do Venom, right? Like, there's no backing out of this, right? So I think it was a little bit of that. But I think, you know, as me being such a big fan of the MCU, having that moment where we can go, we're just getting started and it's going to get crazier from here on out. So I knew we were going to do Venom. I just didn't know how we were going to do it. 5 years later, we here it is.
How long ago did you know you were doing Venom? Like, because that, you know, that happened obviously mid development of the first game.
Yeah, it was pretty much when we were kind of working. I would probably say like halfway through the project, we were like, how do we cap this off? And we knew one of them was going to be Miles getting bit and showing that he has the powers. And then we were like, well, why don't we? And it was a little bit also like getting a better understanding of what Norman was doing with all those tests and trying to figure it out, and learning that one of the other experiments was going on was this with the symbiote. So we knew probably, I'm trying to remember, that's a long time ago and I'm really old. My memory is getting bad. I would say probably like halfway through, and then it was like, and then we said, oh, it's going to be Harry in the tank. And that's when we all kind of like, it was me, John Paquette, our narrative director, Bill Roseman at Marvel, Eric from Marvel, and we all kind of like, oh yeah. And we have that moment, you know, you're going to do something right. So yeah, it was around that time.
Fantastic. Yeah. So, you know, you said you didn't know how you were going to do Venom. What kind of led up to this kind of this very visceral style of Venom? Like, Venom is always very visceral and very deadly, but I think this is probably the most deadly we've seen him in the game.
Outside of comics. Like, this is,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Like, awesome.
You nailed it.
Oh, thank you. That's a testament to the team and their work. I think we kind of looked at it from two different perspectives. We like looked at the comics and go like, what are those characteristics of Venom that people love? Obviously, I think it starts off with like how he looks, like the size, the bulky, the just the raw power and how much, I mean, you've seen it in the 19 inches of Venom statue.
Mine's on the way.
There we go. Sorry, now I'm distracted by my own stupid joke. We wanted that overwhelming, like, whereas Ock was more about the intellect of like challenging Peter and Spider-Man, Venom is power. And we wanted that, like, there's this overwhelming odds in a way that a villain that requires two Spider-Men. that was kind of our goal. And we wanted, like, you know, iconic, the symbol and the teeth and the transformational power. So, and then a big part is that voice, you know, and casting Tony to do the voice of Venom. But then so there's all that, like, that's the stuff, no matter what story you've read, where you came into Venom, like, that's stuff people, they expect it, right? Mm-hmm. That's the, please don't screw it up. Then there's the other thing of, how can we make it our own? And I think that starts with, first of all, Harry end up being, and then how he gets to get, because, you know, early in the game, you see Harry with the symbiote, and we see him in many ways being a hero and using it to not only feel better, but to be not only to basically be one of Pete's partners. And then the sacrifice of the symbiote going to Peter to help save Peter at the end of the, you know, basically the act one. And then essentially the journey of the symbiote and Harry are both being, quote unquote, rejected by Peter, and that bond of being rejected brings them together, actually bond again. So it was kind of like, how can we, and again, that's a little bit with comics and stuff like that, but we felt like, and then obviously Venom's motivations are very different than a comic. Like, I would say, I tend to think, you think of like the Eddie Brock Venom, it's a story of revenge, right? Whereas in many ways, our Venom and Harry is, it's about, they have kind of a twisted way on how they want to heal the world. Harry doesn't want anybody to suffer like as he has suffered. And the symbiote's like, well, I can show you mm-hmm. how we can do it. It's a really effed up way, but we're going to do it. And so I think that's kind of like, find the elements of the character and story that people love and bring that to them. But how can you add your own spin? And I think that kind of direction is what we've done with the whole franchise from the beginning, is like, respect the DNA of the character, but don't be afraid to mix things up from time to time.
I mean, I think that's what's really interesting about this is like, Harry comes from a place of love. Like he and Peter loved each other at one point, and then they have this falling out, and that's where Venom comes in. With Eddie Brock, he just flat out always hates Peter, and it kind of makes it not one dimensional. I think it works, but it is totally driven by revenge. And in this case, it was like, that was kind of took some adjusting, but it works. Like it totally plays
good. And I also think like, for us, like you've read that story before, yeah. like you've, mm-hmm. you've experienced that story. And I think that we go back and forth of like, how close do we stick to the books? How much do we break apart? And the thing we've kind of said to ourselves is, I don't want you to play the comic book story. Like, they're great, but you've seen those. And where can we, you know, maybe we go down a path that seems a little bit familiar, and then we mix things up, or we surprise, or, you know, like, for example, you could probably can tell when Harry has the symbiote in the early game, like, it's very much inspired by Agent Venom, right? It's very much inspired by that kind of thing. Well, you know, like in the comics, that doesn't happen. Like, Agent Venom is like well beyond like the actual real Venom. So, you know, we just wanted to try to find those fun things that like people go, oh, like that's just like Agent Venom. But then it's like, oh, I didn't expect them to do it this way, you know, and stuff like that. So I think we, it's just a balancing act. And I think we, since the first game and then Miles and now this, we're kind of always kind of playing that game within ourselves. Like, how much do we stay the course, what people have done in the past, and then where do we kind of find a way to make it our own?
And I think that, like, you know, speaking about balancing acts, like the biggest wrinkle into this whole Spider-Man Venom kind of dichotomy of them is Miles is here now.
Yeah.
Like that's not something we've
called Spider-Man 2 for a reason.
Yeah. So like, how did you guys kind of go into like approaching that? Like, because, you know, most stories with Peter grappling with dealing with fighting off the symbiote, accepting the symbiote, he's doing that on his own, dealing with that on his own trauma and such. But now he's got Miles. Like,
yeah. Well, I think we knew obviously when we had Miles first beat like in the same city and same world as Peter, it's not like a multidimensional visit, right? We knew eventually we wanted to get to a point where Pete and Miles are together, you know, as peers, right? And, you know, as spider peers. But I think if you look at, like, obviously, when working with the symbiote, the theme of addiction is very prevalent, right? Well, we also know, like, if you might have, like, I know people in my life who, you know, suffer from a different type of addiction. It doesn't just impact the people, that person, it impacts the people around them. And that was something we wanted to show. So it's not only how is it impacting Peterborough? How is it impacting MJ? How is it impacting Harry? How is it impacting Miles? And then, you know, I think in my head, the fight with Miles and Pete is a, what we try to say is like, you know, hey, you're, you know, Miles is there for Peter, right? It's, he's trying to connect with him, but at the very end, it's Peter, the one ripping it off. The final step needs to be taken by the person. Right. And I think that's what we try to show in a superhero way, I guess. So, but I think, you know, it was really important for us to not only have them both there, but develop their relationship, see their relationship change and see, like, you know, very early on, it's kind of Peter being there for Miles. But over the course of the game, you actually see them kind of flip where Miles is the one saying, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, to the point where the second to last mission in the main story, that's when Pete has the anti-venom suit and then Miles shows up with his new suit. And Miles is the one is telling Pete, like, remember what my dad said, remember what Aunt May said, to the point where now he actually says to Pete, says to Miles, what's the play, coach? If you remember from the first game, Miles is the one who says that to Peter, what's the play, coach? So they kind of switch a little bit, and that you see that kind of handoff. And I think for me, that's something I'm probably, you know, so proud of the team, that they were able to really make a game that not only, yes, from a, oh, it's Spider-Man 2, there's two heroes, but it's a story that requires both of them. And we see their relationship change, evolve, grow, as much as we see any of the other relationships in the game.
That was one of those moments that really brought me back into this, the Miles Peter situation, because early on, I was totally bought in, loved it. And then I got to a point where Peter started pulling away because of the symbiote and everything.
Yeah.
And he kept just brushing off Miles.
Yeah.
And I was getting frustrated.
Good.
I was so angry. Good. Every time. I was like, this is terrible.
You can say
this.
He was a dick.
He was. I hated
it. Can I swear on this?
Yes, it's totally fine.
Okay.
It was terrible. I hated that. And I was just like, it brought back so many memories for me and my own personal life that I could relate to times like that. And then to see Miles come at the end and really just step up and become the play caller and just really I loved it.
Well, it's awesome. And I think the thing is, Peter is such a likable character that one thing we struggled with was how much can we make him unlikable and for how long can he be unlikable? Because you don't want to do a symbiote story and not see Peter impacted, but where's the line of like, oh, I don't even care what happens to him. And that we went back and forth of like, how much does his voice change? How much does his attitude change? And I think for me is, I really like the fact that where we got to the point where some of my favorite VO in the game is actually the fight between Pete and Miles. Cause it's pretty, even though it's just like them in combat, it's not the cinematic. It's like the boss fight VO. Mm-hmm. It's pretty emotional. It's pretty like heavy hitting stuff that I think adds to the weight and the emotion of the fight.
How far did you guys go with Peter? Do you have like examples of how far you guys went with Peter where it went too far you could share with us?
God, I'm trying to think. I mean, we went pretty far. I think we never thought he was going to kill somebody, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think that was too far for sure. I don't think there's really coming back from that. I don't have like a great example. I think it's more about like the ramp. Like, is it after one mission that he gets to become like chilly change, or is it like three missions or five? It's like, when does that spike happen? I think we realized like we see elements of it, but it's that when after the Connors fight and Connor says, here's how you can get rid of it. And he goes, what do you mean? This is going to make me a better Spider-Man. And you see this, some switch has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of my favorite scenes is when they, after the, like what I call the nightmare mission where he's sleepwalking, he's like, everything's great. And then when Harry and MJ are kind of challenging him, it's like kind of like basically like an intervention, right? To me, that's worse than like the way he says to them is way worse than like he says, you're not the hero I am. Why don't you pop some more pills? Like that's someone who's like, obviously, not themselves, right? And I think that's to me what we want to show, more than like something gruesome or terrible. Like, to me, that actually hits harder, I think.
Nice.
Going back to the Venom stuff, I mean, once we knew Venom was going to be in the game, I think everybody who was watching that trailer is like, are we going to play as Venom? And then you give us that moment. Can you walk us through that? Like, was there ever going to be a point where, like, you were thinking, maybe we shouldn't do this? Maybe you shouldn't make it. It was always like,
no, if I wanted to survive the internet, he was going to play.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Like, also, the other thing was, I was like, you know, the one of the big turning points of Spider-Man 1 was the reveal of the Sinister Six. And I'm like, how do you top the Sinister Six? I'm like, well, if you let people play as Venom, that would be good. So it was kind of that. And I think the other thing was, even though Pete does some crazy things with the symbiote, there's always like, he never totally crosses the line. Whereas like we wanted to show like kind of unfiltered Venom, like symbiote, like how could we go crazy to the point where like, there's like this ultimate power fantasy of what you could do with a symbiote. And I think we wanted the player to go, this is how brutal this character be. It's going to take now Pete and Miles, like, cause Kraven couldn't do it. All of his hunters couldn't do it. All the Oscorp people. And it's like, this is going to be really tough, and watch you actually feel how tough he could be. So I think, like I said, I didn't know how we were going to do it. And I mean, obviously, you know, when you add a playable character to the game, it's a big investment. You're like, oh my God, and not to mention when you play as Venom, expectations just go through the roof. Right. But I knew we were going to do it. Like, I would have given up other things in the game to make sure we get it.
Yeah. And you're saying all this, you know, symbiote unleashed stuff, but now we know Carnage is coming.
Yes.
I mean, that's some real, like,
oh, yeah, the tease. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, if we ever go down that path,
if just blink twice for us away from the camera,
I think that, that character in particular that's a whole nother level of like, there is, I think with our Venom, there is a, there's still some morality or some kind of, that Carnage character.
Yeah, I mean, even Venom becomes like sort of a hero.
The lethal protector. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Carnage is like, playtime, you know? So who knows? I mean, that is, you know, that's, things can happen in the future.
So you realize you set a really, really high bar now, because people are going to be like, I want to play as Green Goblin. I want to play as everybody else. We weren't expecting to play as MJ in the first game. Like, I feel like that's kind of, it's interesting to throw that on there, because you see Spider-Man in the box. You're like, you play as Spider-Man. That's what it is. Is this something we should expect more of down the road?
I don't know if it's, oh, hey, now every game has to have this playable. I think for us, what one of the things I feel like that makes, like, I look at the Spider-Verse films, right? And they have an identity, right? They, you know, it's whether it's the style, the multidimensional, the, you know, really Miles, you know, is the lead there, right? And the idea that it's a universe of spider heroes, right? All from all over the multiverse. And then MCU, you know, is a very distinct, hey, we're going to make a younger Peter Parker who kind of almost, I don't know, if maybe this is my interpretation of it, so if it's wrong, apologize, Marvel fans. Like, he kind of ends, right? He's right now, like, where we've seen him last. He's kind of where most spider stories begin.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of like, now he's like in the shitty apartment, like, you know, on his own and stuff. They kind of reverse the order. For us, I think it's always been about, part of our thing is we want to show our world from a 360 degrees. So obviously we want to show Pete and Miles in their suit doing super things, but at the same time, we also want to show, we feel it's just as important to show their lives and have playable experiences outside the suit. Because I think if you have relatable human stories, relatable motivations, and see those, the moments in the suit matter more. At the same time, though, it's not just Pete and Miles aren't the only people who live in this world. People like MJ, what's it like to be a hero without heroic superpowers, right? You know, and showing that ability, showing how she can be involved and how she can be a capable hero. And then obviously we even, if you play some of the other content, we have Haley is playable. And I think to your original question, like, I'm not a dummy. People love Venom. And you sometimes just got to give them what they want. And I think, like, if we're going to pick a villain to play as, that's the one you want to get right.
I think you got that right.
Thanks.
Yeah. That's one of those things. That's definitely a pretty big, like, fuck yeah moment. So
did you think he was going to fight Kraven?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I was alone on this. I mean, yeah, I think we talked about this, but because Kraven, you find out, is sick.
Yeah.
You Is that intentional? Like that, you know, that
mirrors might have Harry's stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I think Craven, that's another interesting, that was a tough character to write. That was a really tough, cause like you, I feel like he's one of those characters that could, I mean, obviously his look is very unique is a nice word. It's like, you know, it doesn't really fit into the world super well, right. In terms of just like, I mean, where's the lion vest for him?
He looks like he's in Cats. You can just,
yeah. But like, I think what we did, we said, hey, we're going to treat him really seriously. Right. And we're going to give him like a motivation. Like he's driven by like, I'm going to survive and beat this until someone really deserves to be like, I'm looking for the one who can defeat me. Right. It's a weird motivation. Right. But like it adds to his mystery. Right. And I think, and that's a character that, speaking about how do we get right, we did so many iterations, so many iterations to the point where we realized with a character like Craven, less is more. The less you like, the more he explains things, it's like it's kind of being left behind the curtain. You're like, all right. Like, it's like if we keep him kind of a little bit mysterious and like you're like almost kind of reading into his words, it just came across a little better. And I think, you know, fact when like he's dying, he says, thank you. You know, it's like, I mean, it's like, that's weird, you know, but it's cool. Like it makes him like kind of fits the character that we built.
So you killed him after all that.
We did.
That got me thinking. I feel like comic book superhero death, it's whatever, you know, there's all these alternate timelines, you know, cloning dimensions, people, you know, Jean Grey's like in a pod or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's always something like that. Yeah. Video game death, narratively, it's like if you see someone die in a cutscene, you know, it's kind of, there's more of a finality to it. Meanwhile, the player character, you die repeatedly, whatever.
Yeah.
I guess, is this death final? Like, is this, have we?
Yeah, I would prefer, I'm not saying we would never do this, because I mean, I'm sure someone will play this back and go, nope, you lied. I prefer to, when it happens, right? Like, because, you know, we work up to those moments. So it's like, well, we did all that for just for him to, you know, all of a sudden, you know, like, you know, there's a Grim Hunt story. I think it's the Grim Hunt storyline where I think is like comes back to life, you know, his kids bringing back to life. Like, I understand we're dealing with like characters that have spider powers and symbiote aliens, right? But we do want a level of believability and realism in the world we're building. And so I think it's more about that. Like, I'm telling you right now, Aunt May ain't coming back. Like, she's dead. She's dead, right? Like, we're not resurrecting Aunt May. As much as I love Nancy, who plays Aunt May, she's dead. I think for us, it's about making those moments earned, you know? And I think that it would cheapen all the work that the team has done just to suddenly bring that character back. If there's a great narrative reason or a plausible reason, sure. But I think I would creatively would really not to do that.
I mean, it took you 5 years to make this game. It's like comic books comes out dozens of weeks or whatever. Like, it's a little bit different. There's a different cadence to it.
Yeah, these things take a while, man.
Yeah, it's been in the works for a bit.
I think one of the things me and Josh were kind of alluding to, I cut you off, I apologize, but we were talking about...
I apologize, I'll be cutting all of you off.
No, it's totally great. You're the star here. You're the one we want to listen to.
Okay.
I think one of the things that we had discussed was kind of how Harry and Craven's stories kind of mirrored themselves with both being sick. We were both kind of expecting that the symbiote was going to go on to Craven.
Yeah.
And so, and we just, and then when we just killed Craven, I was like, I was expecting Craven to win, symbiote go to Craven, and then we get a whole nother thing. Yeah. And then, you know, them dealing with Harry.
I feel like we at one point talked about Craven getting the symbiote. I don't think we ever talked about him becoming like getting it on, but like he wanted it so he could find the right person to be the best challenge, right? I don't think we ever talked about him becoming. It's a cool idea, though.
Did you do any like concept sketches of like a cat themed Venom outfit or anything like that?
I will tell you, I haven't told anybody this. We did have a Venomized Sandman concept.
Really? That just sounds gross. Like, you get the sand and the symbiote.
I think that would be great.
It was hard enough to make Sandman.
I bet.
The opening was insane. Speaking of Sandman, I think a lot of people noticed that Sandman was teased in the first game, but he's just in a little vial.
Yeah.
Was there like, is there an explanation of how he got out of the vial, or did you guys just be like,
he's out. Yeah, he's out. I mean, he's out. He's out. I mean, there.
No explanation. There's
I think if anything, we probably just said time had passed and kind of was like in, you know, there's no. Sands of time. Yeah.
I got a follow-up question to that. In the first one, that Peter just left like Sandman in a vial in a backpack on a bed.
Yeah, you know.
She's just like, is that murder?
So maybe he got influenced by the symbiote or something. I don't know. You know, but
under the bridge. Or
exactly. See, this is the stuff that keeps me up at night when you guys talk about that. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't think about that. What are we gonna do?
Yeah. I guess that's what we're kind of curious about. Is there's a bunch of stuff that was teased in the first game.
Yeah.
There's a lot of references to Mysterio, and they're all kind of gags. You know, they're almost like little just Easter eggs and references, Halloween costumes, that kind of thing. And then you have Mysterio like properly fleshed out, like he's got a whole full storyline there. Did you guys have is there like a Bible that's sort of keeping track of, here's where everyone is.
Yeah.
Here's where they were.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we do. I think sometimes though, like what I don't want to do is go, okay, we're going to sit down for 3.5 to 4 minutes, explain to you exactly what's happened between this and that. It slows the game down.
Yeah.
So I have a question. Did not knowing where Mysterio exactly from the backpack or the Halloween thing to that, did it really detract from the whole experience? I'd say no. Maybe I'm wrong. There's probably someone who wants all that information. We do pick and choose sometimes like how much we go into it, but I don't want to like go, hello, boys and girls. We're going to talk about Mysterio and the history of Mysterio and Spider-Man. We try to find those lines sometimes, and it's hard because, you know, there's a lot of people who love that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Could have you're teaching a class
as long as it's not, what we don't want to do is confuse people. So I think that's the one thing we definitely try to avoid. So sometimes if it's bad, it's my fault. Just remember that. We actually have more people now dedicated to like making sure that we're not contradicting ourselves too. That's the thing I want to avoid, is like, are we contradicting ourselves? That would be bad.
Okay. I have a really stupid question. So in the comics, there are villains named Rocket Racer and Big Wheel who have gadgets that are built by the Tinkerer. And in this, you got Coney Island, where there are rides called Big Wheel and Rocket Racer.
And Hydro Bench.
Did the Tinkerer make those rides?
No.
Did you work on
them? No. Okay. We have reinvented our
tech. There's a whole theme about like supervillains working at carnivals.
I know.
Like,
there is. I know. Well, he's reformed supervillain. Yeah, for sure.
Was there ever concern going into this game and, you know, the next game probably that you—
There's a next game?
Oh. Okay. There's not? Oh, no.
Spoiler.
That you guys are running out of villains? Like,
we're not running out of villains.
I mean, the first game you got six, right? You got the six, and then this one you're knocking out some more, but like you never feel like, oh, should we save this one or not?
No. I don't know if this is a real quote, so I apologize, internet, if this is wrong. I could have sworn I heard someone say that when the Marvel Studios team work on a movie, they're like, we're not holding anything. Like, it's like, let's just make it as good as we can. Don't worry. Like, don't worry so much about the future in a way. Like I don't want, like, we shouldn't like be like going, oh my God, we can't do this, because it's like I don't know if we're like, if this game stinks, I'm not gonna make another one, right? Like, I mean, like, so like if we wanted, you know, villain X and we're like, but it can make another thing, like, no, if it's gonna make this game better, mm-hmm. we're never gonna run ideas. Like, we're not gonna run, like, I work with really smart people who have way better ideas than I ever come with. I'll just grab one of them and go, give us ideas, you know? So I promise you that I never think we're going to run out of villains ever.
You're really good at saving some good ones.
Yeah.
Like, you saved Venom. You saved the Green Goblin. Like, these big ones. And I really appreciate that. You know,
good.
It keeps me.
Well, I think, you know, I think we, you know, I mean, even though I say we don't hold back, we are thinking about where things can go. Like, you know, that, I think that's part of the process. Like, and I always say, like, you know, I get asked like, oh, do you have it all mapped out? And I go, well, we have a plan, but I say it's a very bendy plan where, like, hey, you know, we were going to go left, but you know what? Actually, someone came up with a good idea. We're going to go right. And then we'll come back to where we are. Like, for example, when we made the first game, there was no character called Haley. Like, there was nothing. Mm-hmm. The Miles team said, hey, we have this great character we want to introduce named Haley. Well, guess what? We loved her too, and we're going to expand her and make her a bigger part as she was in Spider-Man 2. I'm trying to think what else. Like, there's just so much that we've done that was never a part. I mean, we're talking about the very end of the game. Like, I will tell you two things. We're totally talking spoilers here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otto was always going to be teased at the end of this game. Even like back on like early Spider-Man 1 days, I said, we're going to make Otto so good. I go, we have to, he's my favorite Spider-Man villain. Mm-hmm. I go, we're going to make him that he's going to come back if we ever can do multiple games. But Cindy Moon was, Cindy's invention was not, was never in the, never first talked about. Never. Oh, like never. You know, when we were on Spider-Man 1, I wasn't like, oh, we're going to end with the tease of Albert Moon and his daughter, Cindy. Never. Like, that's just keep working the franchise, looking where we can go. And if we get fortunate enough to keep working on these things, this is something we might explore.
All right. Spider-Man 3, right? So, I mean, you got three playables.
I don't know. I'm just trying to make sure that I get through. We're taping this, what, the day before, day of launch or day after launch. I just want to make sure I can get through it. So,
so I'm not going to pressure you to talk about like Silk or Cindy Moon, because I know that that's just going to make you make that face.
I'm a terrible poker player, by the way. So here you go. Yeah.
I am curious. Is there anything that Marvel flat out shot down? Any ideas that were too out there, or just the team shot down internally, like sand be it?
No, nothing like you can't do this because of this X or Y or Z. I think it comes down to more of like, can we do it with the time we have and at the quality we want to hit? Like I mentioned, like there was a discussion and there was to the point where there's a concept image of Venomized Sandman. Super cool idea. Like, maybe one day I'm probably getting in trouble for saying it, but whatever. It's really cool image. Like, it's really cool. We were never going to get it done at the quality we wanted to. And it was enough of a challenge to make regular Sandman cool. And I'm like, okay, now we're going to do it as a Venomized version. This team went above and beyond anything I could have ever expected when we first started this. So like, I was like, we're not going to do it. So it's more about that. Like, that being said, like, we check ourselves and like, okay, hey, can, you know, like, for example, we talked to Marvel like, hey, you know what? You notice fire doesn't hurt the symbiote and Venom in this game. Like, did you guys notice that? But typically that's a weakness of, so originally there was like five different weaknesses of the symbiote. We're like, oh my God, how are we going to communicate all these different things? We're like, you know what? For our game, for our universe, we're just going to keep it to high frequency sound. So, and we said, hey, Bill, Eric, Tim, our Marvel producers, are you guys cool? We just simplify it down to this. And like, yeah, as long as you guys explain it, it's for like, someone's like, why is Harry not getting hurt by the fire? And it's like, we actually have, if you notice in the rescue Tombstone mission where you guys rescue, he actually, Pete purposely says, is the fire bothering you? And he goes, no, I don't feel anything. Just so I could make sure that we cover our bases. And I remember going, guys, the line playing the game, make sure he says it. Can you say it twice? Like, because I'm so worried about that. But it's more that kind of stuff than like flat out. No, I mean, we killed Aunt May. Pretty much we can, you know, and I'm not talking about Spider-Man 1, but, and I think I've mentioned this, all Marvel ever asked about that was, is it earned? Mm-hmm. That's all they care about. They don't care. It's for some reason, a lot of people think, and I get it, it's because it happens across different things. Like, oh, the brand owner is like so rigid. They're really not. They just want awesome games with great stories. And they let us do some really cool things.
So on that note, you put a symbiote all over Mary Jane Watson.
She turned into
Scream, which is, it's one of those ones where like, I feel like if you make, you know, you make Venom or somebody, it's like, oh, it's, I mean, it's been what, Flash Thompson, Eddie Brock. Like there's that thing where you make, You apply the character name to a different character and people are like, oh, it doesn't count. But it felt like it really worked here.
Yeah. She originally wasn't Scream. She did get symbiotized. And actually the first concept image we did, she actually has more of a black and white like costume. Like you see, it's really cool. She's like totally symbiote punching Peter and you see him like this. But she has like more of like a black and white suit on, but you see her face. And then we were like, but we kind of seen that already. Why don't we just make her Scream? I mean, she has red hair. I'm like, you know, why don't we just kind of play off that
yellow shirt?
So yeah. And yeah. How awesome, how cool is that? Right. And we were just like, let's do it. And again, like Marvel was like, sure that they could. And that's a way, like the character is still Scream and everything you love about Scream, but the host is someone different. That's kind of our spin on it. Right. So, yeah, I like that.
I enjoyed the Scream fight.
It's fun. And that's an example of like, yeah, it's a big boss fight of like cross the neighborhood, right? But it's really, if you listen to the VO, it's kind of what Miles did to Peter. Peter's trying to connect through and break through to mm-hmm. MJ and take everything, like, you know, kind of he learned and go, this is not you, right? And again, at the very end, she's the one who finally goes, okay, enough is enough, and goes to the, you know, the area where all the sound is happening to help break away from the symbiote.
Yeah, speaking of the boss battles, like, you guys really seem to upgrade the boss battle.
It was a huge focus.
Yeah. What was the mentality going?
Yeah. So there was two things. One was we really wanted to push the epicness of them. Like, I think the lizard fight is a good example of like, hey, we want to take advantage of everything that, like, one is when you go, like, when you read a comic or you go to the movies, like, you see these like ridiculous fights across like different city blocks, and they're on buildings, and they're above below ground, and they're going through everything. Like, it's like a freaking freight train. It's like crazy. And we felt like, even though we were happy with our boss fights in the past, they were restricted in terms of space, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're like, hey, how can we take advantage, like, all the streaming stuff that the PS5 allows us to do? Like, can we go across, take advantage, like, whether you see it in Sandman, you see it in Lizard, obviously with Venom takes place like crazy all over the place, right? And even some of our smaller ones, like Scream, like starts on one street and then goes into another neighborhood. So we wanted to highlight like that moving. But then I think the second thing was we wanted to have a little bit more of a level of challenge and mastery and have the fight evolve over time. So you'll notice that, I'm pretty sure this is true, every boss fight, the phases, there's something new introduced every time. So there's something like, oh, you've mastered this, now we're going to add this. There's that. And obviously, you know, the introduction of the parry mechanic helped a little bit of that too. But then I think the other thing was, and this is probably not as much as I talk about, but in Spider-Man 1, if you do something crazy in the city, like, do you remember the E3 that we did the helicopter chase and we showed the helicopter webbed up? Well, in the final game, you play that, you do that awesome thing, mission's over, you just turn around the camera, the helicopter's gone. There's no cause and effect. Now we have these big moments where you can see, like, whether it's a boss or not, these big epic moments, you see the aftermath. Like, I'm drawing a blank what it's actually called. I think it's actually called Aftermath, but the second mission in the game is, we called internally, Aftermath, because we wanted to show, hey, this big Sandman thing happened, like, city got effed up, right? Or, like, you know, the mission early on where Kraven the Hunter show up to kidnap Lee and Scorpion. Mm-hmm. You can go back and you can see the boat overturned from multiple missions still in there. So that you see, like, the city reacting to all that stuff. So that was
the Speed Demon roller coaster's out of order. I went back to take pictures of the Easter eggs, and
there you go. So I think, there was that kind of stuff. So really it was about selling the epicness of those big boss fights, the challenge, upping the challenge and mastery of it. And then obviously having more of a cause and effect.
Yeah, I noticed that there was one of the missions where you go into a building and then, like, I think it, like, detonates, and I was swinging by, and I was like, there's this giant cloud of black smoke and fire trucks are there, and I'm like trying to help put out the fires. I'm like, no, I can't do it. I can't help this time. It's all you.
Yeah.
You guys, on you, fire department.
Can we talk about the costumes a little bit? Or sorry, suits.
Yeah, right. Costumes.
Costumes. So, okay.
By the way, I think I've said costumes 100 times. Don't worry about it.
I think some of them are costumes, though.
They are.
You've got the one that's the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
You know, the Ruby's Halloween one.
Yeah.
So, there were also a bunch that didn't make it into the game. So, why, what's the reasoning behind cutting costumes? You made a bunch of changes this time around. Just kind of walk us through.
Well, I think first is, like, it's not just free to all of a sudden, it's like, oh, we created it, it just moves over. Like, they have to be sometimes remade. Like, they, you know, those, a lot of those are PS4. And then, you know, even the ones that showed up in the remaster, they have to be basically PS5 sized or whatever. Like, you know, have to be upgraded. Right. So there's a work factor to get it in there. Right. We also wanted, and I know that's probably an excuse, like, of course, just work harder.
Just rename PS4 to die.
You know, exactly. Right. I think also we just wanted to have a new offering of different suits. Right. I think we wanted to have, like, for example, I wanted the first noir suit. I wanted the jacket, right? You know, like, but we, you know, it's harder. It's like, it's a huge rigging thing, especially now and then with the capes and everything with, like, the web wings, like, it can, like, look really buggy. Right. So, like, it's like those kind of things. So it was just picking and choosing, like, you know, we had our favorites. We had things that we wanted to introduce, things that new things we wanted to do. And, it's a little bit of like, here are our favorites, here are what we know the fans want. Like, I mean, I knew from day one, every movie suit that they want is going to be in there. Like, it's mm-hmm. got to be in there. Otherwise, we're going to, you know, yep. And I get it. Hey, everybody has their favorites, especially the movie suits. We got to get them in there. It's just, and then also the other thing was, it was really important to me that Miles and Pete have the same number of suits. It was really, really important to me that they had. So we want to make sure that we had equal. There's some really great suits. I still can't believe we did the one with the Spider-Verse and the cape. Like, I can't believe we did the one where the store-bought one. It's like, yeah. Oh, yep. God, man, that's awesome. Really fun. And then when you add, like, you make the animation change, so they're, like, playing, like, in the Spider-Verse world, it's so cool.
Yeah, I played pretty much once I unlocked that. I played the rest of the game in that style. I just love that
animation. Have you guys done the trick where he pulls out the Rubik's Cube? Pete pulls out the Rubik's Cube while he's falling?
No,
I haven't gotten that one yet.
Yeah. So basically if you fall far enough and you start to do the right commands, he'll start doing the Rubik's Cube.
What?
Oh my goodness.
Pete pulls out. So you know how Miles does the cell phone at the end?
Yeah.
At the end of like the small dive, like Pete brings out a Rubik's Cube.
Oh. I've had him, I think, doing the Rubik's Cube when I have like swapped over, but I haven't had it during a dive.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. That's the Spider-Verse.
What happened to Underpants Pete? Like, what happened to that? Why didn't we get like,
canonically?
he got a little heavy. He's a little shy. He's a little shy. I don't know. It's just, you know, we could probably do that for like 20 of the suits, right? It's just making sure that I don't know why we didn't choose it. The other thing is like we talked a lot to the character team. Like, what are the character team excited about making? Like, you know, like, I mean, they put so much time and effort into those suits. I'm like, I want them to like wake up every morning and go like, I'm excited to work on this character. I'm excited to work on this suit. So, you know, we leaned on them as well, because a lot of them are hardcore comic book fans, and like, they have their suits, and like, for example, like one of our characters, so I know really well, Dustin, like, he's so hardcore. Like, he knows what people are saying, what they want. So it's like, hey, I'm gonna let that team figure it out. And then like, obviously myself and Jacinda and our Ryan Smith, our game director, and Josue, our design director, because it all ties in the progression as well. And we want to make sure that, hey, are we picking the right suits that make people want to go do the optional content to go upgrade and stuff like that. So yeah.
Speaking of
is that my way of not answering your question, but answering it?
No, you did. That was perfect. It was great.
Okay, good.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn, because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help.
For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Speaking of side activities, I love the side activities in Spider-Man 2. The flame side quest was fantastic.
Yeah.
For me, the one that stood out the most, though, were Miles's bop and hard bop side missions. And those ones just struck a chord like that. And something I've never had in a like blockbuster AAA experience. When you get to the museum after solving everything with Miles and you just see all this real life history just kind of right in front of you, like you've go around, you explore it. It's got all real stuff. And then it's also got a little bit of Marvel history kind of blended in because you've got to. How did that process come up? Because I've never seen, I literally was in tears, like not because the moment was so emotional, but because it was emotional for me seeing so much Black culture just put front and center in a AAA game that's virtually almost never been done before.
Thank you very much. That's a huge compliment. I appreciate that. It's a great question. And I'm going to get to your answer. Okay. So first one is, as I mentioned, the boss fights were an area of focus for us. We knew that we wanted to level up our optional activities. And I think the biggest, there's two areas where is one is no matter what we did, we wanted to have some type of narrative attached to it. We, you know, like for example, even though the Sandman crystals is really a quick little combat challenge, there's a story that adds up and to the end, right? So we wanted to make sure everything had a story, everything. Like, and it was a big, and we also knew like Marvel fans love story, right? Like they don't want it to feel like a checklist. They want to have level engagement, whether it's playing as Haley as that one mission, you know, with the flowers to the graffiti and the, you know, the Howard quest to Miles helping the kids of Broken Visions all the way through something even as big as the flame, right? We wanted to have that stuff. And I know everybody's like, I want more side content. It's like, at the end of the day, like we just got to do what makes, we can make the best quality possible. So that leads me to basically the Harlem quest line that you're talking about, where it starts with the help reel where he learns about the things being stolen. So when the Miles team was working on that game, what I thought they were brilliant at was them not only showing the house, Miles learning the kind of Spider-Man he wanted to be, him connecting to his new community in Harlem with those quests that like all those people that show up at the very end are all the quest givers of that area. Mm-hmm. Right. And someone said very early on, how can we expand upon his connection to his community? And someone had the idea of how can we use the music history of that area, his love of music, and connecting the two. So we had our writers went into overdrive to learn about that stuff to the point where they were contacting people, family members of those artists to make sure we can get permission to do that. So that is all John Paquette, our narrative director, Jamie, one of our writers, and multiple other people, consultants that we've talked to, all working extremely hard to make sure that we were doing it the right way, the respectful way, we were accurate. And we thought that it was just a, you know, I talked about that 360 degree world. That's an example of that, of showing like Miles is just not the kid in the suit. He's a 17-year-old kid who lives in Harlem, who has a love of music and maybe doesn't know everything about the NPCs talks about how like the music you listen to today is influenced by this stuff from back in the day. I hope those conversations happen in real life. And I hope that some of that shows that. So I that's definitely one of the pieces that I'm probably most proud of in the game, that we can show that kind of stuff. And, you know, and I know there's a group of people that just like, oh, I want more superhero stuff. Well, being a hero just isn't being in the suit all the time. It's being a good person, you know, and being connecting to your friends, your family, your community. And I hope that shows some of that.
That's also like not out of place in the Marvel universe at all.
Yeah.
The comics have a long history of overlapping with our reality.
100%.
It's like, it's not like a made up superhero city. It's New York.
Yeah.
So to have some of that in there, it works.
And I, again, like that's all the writers. Like they went and then, you know, it's the writers taking the idea, but then you get your animators to come in, your designers to like, you know, Josh, the designer, had to like lay out that whole museum space and like all those interactions and all those things and making sure we had the UI to have the text to come up when you interact with those objects and all those conversations. Like it's, and then the audio team, like the work the audio team that did to make the music right and everything. And like, and then the environment team, like, I mean, like you're talking to me, but I didn't do the work.
No,
like
I mean,
they are the hero. They are the stars, the team, the ones that make that, put it all together. Like I sit there and go, that's cool. Can we do this? They're the real superstars.
I mean, if I could send flowers to everybody on your team that worked awesome on that part, I would.
Great.
Like it felt so authentic, so genuine. It just like, it's
that's great to hear, because I can tell you like there are things like that to me I always worry, like are we doing it the right way, because the last thing you want to do is have the good intention and it comes across completely differently, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, we do a lot of work, we not only do the research, but we get consultants, we make sure that, like, I mean, for example, like when we shoot all the Haley scenes, we have consultants on set to make sure we are doing it right, we are getting all the sign language right, we are even how, you know, like for example, like something I didn't even think of because I'm an idiot. I'm like, oh, we need the teacher. We need the interpreter in the classroom, and she needs to have a sight line to Haley so Haley can see. So like, I was like, remove this character, like move this person out of Haley's way so she can see. Like, and like, that's the stuff that terrifies me. Like, I'm not like, yes, you worry about if like Sandman is going to be fun and all stuff, but like, you got to make sure that stuff is right. Cause that would never want anybody to be offended or hurt if we didn't portray that stuff in the right way.
I mean, I love that, like, there's a bunch of like technical, like quality of life accessibility options, and there's also accessibility, you know, baked into the narrative, which is,
yeah,
it's really cool.
It's real. I mean, I think we talk a lot about is, you know, how do we, yes, you know, we have characters with, you know, turning into alien goo monsters and people who are sticking to walls, but like you said, it's New York, it's a real place, real people, and we want to reflect that in everything we do.
Also, like Miles helping his mom out with something like that felt like so,
yeah.
And he's like dancing with her at the end, and it's,
yeah,
that just felt like,
yeah,
really just such a awesome portrayal of that, yeah, character.
I love that intro scene where he goes to his mom. He goes, "Mom, do you need me to?"
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, I mean, that's Najee, and to me, like, that's a good example. It's a really well written scene, but when you have the actors in there and they start doing it, they just take it to a whole nother level. Like, I don't even remember if we did the whole like in the script, whether it is or not, the way that Najee does it is so charming. You're like, I love this kid. Like, I love him. I want, you know, like, I just want to give him a big hug. Right. You know, like, and of course, so that, and I could tell you, there's a ton of scenes like that in the game, moments like that, where the actors just elevate everything we do.
I was going to ask you, was there anything, any moment that the performance capture voice actors kind of improvised that you weren't expecting that made the cut?
Yeah. So I'll give you a couple. So it's less about they didn't do some, like, for example, do you guys remember the scene where Harry says we are Venom for the first time?
Yes.
So it's a pretty emotional scene where he's trying to convince, he's like giving Pete like one more chance, like, come with me. Like, and that's where he, you know, he gets really angry when he says, don't call us a thing. So it's a really important moment, and we're on set. It's, you know, it's me, myself, Bobby, the animation director, Ben Arfman, one of our narrative directors. And then we have Graham, who plays Harry, Laura, who plays MJ, and Yuri, who plays Peter. And it's going, and we, you know, in between takes, like, me, Bobby, and Ben get together and we're talking, and maybe it might've been Bradley as well, I think, or something like that. And we're talking, and Graham just goes, guys, I got it. And we're like, he's like, I got it. I'm like, okay. And we just do the scene again, and he just slays it. He just absolutely slays the scene, like unbelievable. And like, I think that's a good example of like, sometimes you just let the actors do their thing. Like, just let them do their thing. My biggest disappointment was I had COVID the day we shot the final scenes with Pete and Harry during the fight. And I just watched it. I had to watch it via like remote, and hearing Yuri like crying and everything, and just like, it's crazy. And then seeing it, just And then seeing Graham with the moment where we did the, what was really cool, we did the scene at the cemetery when he hears his mom's voice, but we actually had Tony on set that day. And hearing Tony talk, it was crazy. So it's like, to me, it's more of it's less of like them. I can't remember exactly like everything they just do right away. Awesome. I'm old. I can't remember anything. It's them I will give you one, but it's just them like just elevating everything. I remember like, so Jim Pieri plays Craven. Mm-hmm. He's a really hard character to play because you can make him look really silly. But Jim just like dove head first into this character. So by the end, he was telling us what Craven should do. So one of the last, like we shoot out of order, right? We got crazy, like a movie set does. There's the part where Craven's coming into New York with the VTOL and he's talking about Sandman. And Jim's like, well, I'm just going to be playing around with my knife while we're talking. Like he's the one telling us he's going to do that. So, and we're like, all right, Jim, go for it, man. Do what you got to do. And when you see people like Jim dive into a character like Craven, you see Mark Witton, like all those crazy lizard like things, that's him actually like him, like freaking out and his body convulsing and change. That's all Mark. That's not anime. That's Mark doing that. And like his voice changing. And then Graham, like just kind of taking on this big role of Harry, which is really hard to get right. Some of my favorite scenes are the slowest, like the more intimate ones, like of him and Pete, like in the bleachers at Midtown High and stuff like that. Those are, as being a creative director, I think probably one of my favorite things is to be on set and watch these people work, because like you see the writers do such a great job in scripts. The animators do such a good job of directing and planning out the day and shooting and getting character people to do. And then you get the actors coming in and going they're so into it. Like they're so like, talk to Yuri. Not like I have to basically protect Najee because he wants to do every stunt. I'm like, stop. Like, you know, like to the point where we did a push-up contest one day. I go, until you can beat me in push-ups, you're not going to do all this stuff. So, you know, like those kind of things. But it's just, we have a lot of, I'm sure you guys have interviewed a lot of the PlayStation studios. I think there's one of the things I think about the studios is that the dev team, the actors, there's a really strong bond between us. And I think you see that. And that's why I think our story ends up being better than it ever could be because of that bond and those characters and those actors.
So at the end of the Spider-Bots mission, we get a little Spider-Verse tease.
Yeah.
Delilah, I believe her name is.
Yeah.
What's going on with that?
So as you know, like we've kind of had Spider-Verse connections since the first game, whether it was the suits and then Miles, we had the suits plus kind of the animation style. And then we were talking to the Spider-Verse team who we've known forever and we had great relationship. Like they're always doing cool things with our game and their movies. Obviously the last one you see mm-hmm. Pete there, you see Genki playing Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2. And we were thinking like, well, what can we do? How can we go beyond what we've normally done? And we had multiple meetings with the directors and I mentioned like, hey, we have this like Spider-Bot collectible and could we somehow have a connection, you know, could somehow they be related to the Spider-Verse or something like that. And they were like, yeah, sure. So we just kind of pitched the idea. And again, it was kind of I talked about like, we wanted even like a collectible to have a story behind it. And it's kind of like a narrative payoff at the end to get this little kind of Spider-Verse connection. And, you know, we'll see where the future holds.
Yeah. Not setting up anything for the next movie, right?
We'll see.
I mean, and they name drop Miguel, like yes. Very specifically.
Yeah.
I'm sad because I did that mission as Peter. I've turned the last one in as Peter. I was like, is there separate dialogue if you play it as Miles?
I can't remember exactly. There is. I know Miles says something. I'm drawing a complete blank. I'm a terrible, I'm terrible creative director, people. He definitely has something. I'm not sure if he says the exact same thing or not, but there's definitely a line for Miles in there as well.
I mean, is there a separate line if you show up in Miguel's suit?
I don't think so.
I was wondering.
That's where I'm like, oh, we didn't think of that. That's the stuff that keeps me up at night.
Let's talk about the MJ missions a little bit.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Because you made her like the most OP character in the game. Just get it out there.
She's OP.
One shot everybody.
She's OP.
How did those come together? Like, what was the...
So I knew that those missions weren't the fan favorites coming out of Spider-Man 1. And we had two choices. We could say, all right, we'll make it easy on us and just not do it. And everybody would go, great, no MJ missions. Or we could say, hey, we're going to we've talked about this, showing the world from all different angles. We're going to make her moments better. We're going to take on the challenge. We're going to make people like playing as her. We pick and choose our spots. We knew we had to make her more of a proactive, capable person. And if she's a little OP, I don't give a shit. She's fine. I don't care. I wanted her. I felt like it would be taking the easy way out if we didn't make her play. To the point where I said, we're going to do it. I don't care. We'll cut other stuff, because I want to make sure that it's important to show her be a capable hero. I think it's really important, and you don't need, this might sound cliche or whatever, cheesy, but like, you don't need to have powers to be a hero.
Yeah.
And I wanted her to show that. And I think, like, for example, in the original plan, she wasn't a playable character in the last mission, but we thought, hey, can we get all three of them working as a team, in that final mission? So at the very end, she's there.
I felt a lot of,
but yeah, she's OP. She's probably OP. I don't care.
I felt a lot of the Insomniac DNA while playing with her, especially in that mission, because I mean, you guys have done tons of Ratchet and Clank games where you've got this kind of third person shooter kind of aspect.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it like. So for me, I felt right at home. So I was just running through headshotting bunch of symbiote people, and I was having a blast.
Well, you know what's crazy? I don't think I've ever told this story. In Spider-Man 1, there was a really, really early, like super early in development. We never made it, but it was part of a story treatment where Pete was going to be injured, and he could barely walk. She was going to actually try to get him to safety, and she was going to grab one of his web shooters and she was going to put it on, actually fire at enemies that were trying to get to them. Never happens. I think that's kind of probably where the web shooter idea came from. I was like, let's give her the ability to stun enemies in the first mission. And I was like, let's give that web shot, give her more of a projectile. And then we obviously did the sound thing at the end. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just like, I just didn't want us to wimp out and take the easy way out. And I thought that, and again, like, testament to the team, especially like that mission where the second mission you play as her, that's like Ben Arfman, Neil, Lindsay. Like, I just said, like, make her feel like a hero, and they did it. And so I'm really proud. And if she's a little bit overpowered, oh well.
It's a video game.
Exactly.
It's okay.
Yeah.
So one of the trailers that dropped before launch showed her flubbing the Akira slide.
Yeah.
And caught some attention. Was there ever, and like, throughout Spider-Man 2, there's a whole theme of her. She's like, oh, I ride a bike now. Was there ever missions prototyped and stuff where you guys had MJ riding a bike?
There was talks of her actually being able to control the bike. It was like a scope thing. It's sometimes you got to pick and choose your battles. And I was like, if we do this, we're gonna have to give up something else. And I think we could concentrate on her doing other things rather than the bike. But yeah, it was discussed.
Okay. 100%. I figured as much. I mean, Insomniac's working on something else with somebody that's using the bike.
Oh.
So it's kind of,
that's a slick way to get to that subject.
So, it's just kind of,
there was, I mean, especially when we did the bike sequence with Pete and Harry riding there was definitely talks about the motorcycle, but it never got very far.
Okay.
So yeah,
that's a good question though.
Let's address the Wolverine in the room. That's the next thing.
It is.
There's a suit. Miles gets a Wolverine suit. It's a very clearly a Wolverine suit.
Yes, it is.
He's the best at what he does. We get he's got the ears. Were there plans to do any other teaser stuff like that at any point? Was there ever any you talk about taking reference from the MCU. Was there ever thought of being like, oh, Logan's going to walk by in the post-credits scene?
We wouldn't be true Marvel fans if we didn't have discussions like that. But I think for us, it was, hey, let's, working on these games is really hard. They're really complicated. And I think it was just like, hey, let's let the Wolverine team cook. Let's let them cook. And if that something ever happens in the future, great. But right now, let's just make sure that let's not box anybody into a corner, and let's just make sure that they have a clear runway to make the best Wolverine game possible, and it's going to be awesome. So I'm really excited about it, and we wouldn't be like Marvel fans if we didn't talk about things.
Yeah, I mean, you had Doctor Strange and Wong in there, but they never show up.
They don't ever show up. Yeah,
I really liked having some sort of magic in there, and then you got the portals back in Ratchet.
Once we saw that in Ratchet, we're like, we're gonna figure out how to use that some way, some way. Because the other thing is we had the portals, but then we also had we're on PS5, so we could move through the city faster. And then I was like, we got to do at least one backdrop that's not New York. We got to go somewhere really crazy. And the team, our team did the, you know, like the iceberg stuff. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. So yeah, I was really psyched.
Where is that? Are you able to share?
I think we just call it Antarctica. I think we do. I'm pretty, God, I hope that's what we call it. I'm pretty sure that's what we say internally.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you kept swinging, would you get to the Savage Land and then fight Khazar?
God, Savage Land's pretty cool, huh?
So, like, this is a softball question. You're going to still panic.
I'm not.
If you've done three games in New York.
Yeah.
That makes sense for Spidey. It makes sense for Marvel. It's the, you know,
yeah,
center of it all. If you could send Spider-Man to a different location, where would you send him? Like, you personally, I'm just sort of.
Oh, that's a great question. I probably would say somewhere more of like, I don't know if I would say a particular like thing. I think some type of natural setting. Like I do love that moment in No Way Home when he's going to like swinging through like the forest and he's going to eventually finds Electro and Sandman. Is that No Way Home, right?
No Way Home. Yeah.
The third one. Yes. Yeah. I always thought that's kind of how would the Peter Miles navigate a more natural setting? So maybe something like that.
Interesting. Cool. Speaking on maps as well, we noticed like some differences between like the map changing a bit between games. One of our gameplay editors noticed Nelson and Murdoch's sign is gone. Is that intentional or is that just oops?
Are they okay?
Yeah. Did they break?
Did they upgrade? We just haven't found their bigger building.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of us, I worked remotely almost the whole project. So yeah. That's a good question. Stay tuned.
Okay.
Yeah. There, good find though.
In addition to that, I notice a lot of Rand Industries stuff around there. And they bring up Rand quite a bit.
Did you find the Baxter building?
I did.
Okay.
Yes. Found the Baxter building, found Rand Industries. What other Easter eggs should fans be on the lookout for?
They should go to Wakandan Embassy with Miles.
Oh.
Wearing the suit or?
Just go with Miles.
All right.
Okay.
It's a small Easter egg.
Okay. I mean, this is tricky because we're recording this before the game is out. And
yeah.
It's always hard to tell like what people are going to immediately uncover and what's.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's. I asked. No one's found that yet. I don't think.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you know, because the game gets spoiled within 3 seconds. So.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
I kind of want to talk about the gameplay overall.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think we really touched on combat much. But you decided to dial down a lot on web gadgets, I noticed.
Yeah.
What was the thought process going into
that? I don't think it was like a conscious choice to go less web gadgets. I think it was, we were noticing that the abilities, like we call them like slotted abilities, the L1 plus face buttons, right, were going to be a major focus for us. And the problem was like at one point we still had like, we had like a bunch of gadgets. We had the gadget wheel, right? Mm-hmm. And eventually, like, you get to the point where, like, these characters, like, they're become gods. Like, they can't, there's so much stuff. Like, there's nothing you could give the enemies, right, that will make it, like, you're not, like, wrecking house. The other thing is, because so many of the abilities are so offensive, our thought was maybe, can we have more gadgets that are more about setting things up rather than just, like, the win button? Like, you know, where I feel like in the first game, they were definitely more, like, oh, they're going to do damage. And we were like, hey, can they, like, for example, the upshot is more about getting people up in the air so then you can follow up and do aerial combat. Or like, hey, the web grabber brings everybody together so you can either do like, maybe you're going to do a pounce with Pete's Miles's bioelectricity, or you're going to do like a, you know, the iron arm swipes with all of them, or you're going to do a big punch, you know? So I think it was more about maybe changing the goal or the identity of the gadgets. It was more about that. And because also like the slotted abilities were so powerful. I mean, like they were even way more powerful earlier in the game. It was like, you cannot lose. Like it doesn't matter. You just can't lose.
I'll be honest. I missed some of those gadgets a little bit just because when it comes to stealth.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of those, I remember playing, I mean, I hadn't played in a long time, but I'd always do the little tripwire ones or whatever.
Someone mentioned that online today. I saw that. They missed it. Yeah, it's a good one.
I feel like to me, I don't know, it seems like there's a little less focus on stealth this game and more.
There definitely was. You know, I think that's one of the things I think that myself and Ryan and maybe some of the team think about, like, you know, looking back, you know, maybe there were some, I do think like it's probably more like you have to be, you like have to do it more on your own rather than like we're saying, oh, this is a stealth sequence. Like, for example, if you do a lot of the, if you find a lot of the hunter bases, yeah. you can that's a great, either whether it's the bases or like the little blinds on the top of the buildings, mm-hmm. there's definitely more, but we, you know, the game definitely, especially the second half was like, it's kind of balls to the wall action kind of thing. Yeah. And I think that, like obviously we set it up in the fish market and the sanctum. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just one of the things we, I don't know if it was like a conscious choice of like, oh, we're not going to do stealth. I don't think it was that, just kind of weirdly played out like that. And I do think that, you know, maybe we did miss some opportunities there here and there. I mean, I wouldn't go back and go, oh my God, I'd redo the whole game. But I do think I understand it's definitely a fair critique.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was something that
actually not supposed to say that. It's actually terrible. Nope, you disagree with you. The game's all game's perfect. 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
Right. Yeah, hire me now. No.
Yeah.
To your credit, I felt myself missing gadgets in the first game, but when you kind of pull back, it's like, what does Spider-Man do? Like he uses webs and he fights people. Like he's not really, like he's not James Bond. Like that's not, it's fun in a video game and it's fun to play, but at the same
time. It's also very Insomniac. I think that was like a lot of like, we're like, oh, well people are, it's Insomniac. They expect us to do like 35 different gadgets. And it's like, we've done a lot of Ratchets, a lot of Sunsets, a lot of Fuse, a lot of things. Like it's like, okay, like let's take advantage of what Spider-Man does. I think a little bit too.
Just punch the guys in the face.
Punch them in the face.
I really enjoyed the parry system though. It did make the combat a lot more, you know, involved and
that's great. And I think that was the other thing is like we wanted to, and that was the thing is like, we talked about giving all the heroes, all this new stuff, but like we wanted to get you just to get away from like everything is circle, everything is dodge, mm-hmm. and having those undodgeables or those even unparryable moves just is enough to kind of break up the, you got to think a little bit more.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I do think
less button mashing,
but I can tell you like, man, like we had never made before Spider-Man, we had really never made a third person action brawler before. Well, you can imagine we had to learn a lot how to make a parry. Like we went through so, oh my God, the amount of usability testing on parry, like to like the very, very end of like, do we have the timing right? Do you have a pretty good time?
At first it was really tough, but eventually I kind of got the rhythm.
Yeah, good. Yeah. And like, that's what parry's supposed to be, right? It's not supposed to be like the win button, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
It's supposed to be hard. Like there's play through entire Souls games. And
yeah. Like I can tell you, like, I love God of War more than anybody, but I'm terrible at parry. I'm terrible at
you should read my parry guide.
Eric Williams, fix it. No,
I wrote a parry guide for it. Check it out.
Okay. I'm just not very good at parry, but I don't know. I don't remember how it came about, but I think it was just like, hey, we need to give, it was like, it's that ping pong thing. It's like, okay, Spider-Man has the abilities. Okay. But then now they're going to come with this and then we have to counteract that. We're going to do that. So it's like kind of that, you know, that's, we just wanted to, I'm glad it resonated with you. It means a lot because we worked really, really hard on it.
I really liked the parry system because there were so many fights where I was like, okay, dodge, dodge, dodge. And then the undodgeable comes in mid combo or tail end of the combo. And I'm like, okay, I can't dodge that third hit, even though I can't, you can, but I can't because I won't land in time to parry. So it made me have to really rethink how I was approaching those fights.
You know how I knew we were doing something right with boss fights? My hands were actually sweating during some boss fights. And I'm the one who's supposed to know how the game is played. And I'm like, well, this is like that second fate that when after Pete and the lizard fall through, like they could fall into the sewer again. Mm-hmm. That last phase is tough. Like it's really, really tough. And I remember, and we originally, I know we have the boss, the health bars on the bosses. Like that got added like halfway through development.
Really? Yeah. I was curious about that.
So shout out Mark Cerny for convincing us to add one of our producers, Mark Cerny. He convinced us we should have the boss health bars. And I was like, no, I want it to be cinematic. I want it to be cinematic. He's like, Brian, you need to have the boss. These things are going on too long. You got to give people more feedback. And I remember texting and going, Mark, you're right. Because they put a temp one in there. And I'm like, you're so right. It helps a lot.
See, I like the health bars. I think for me, I didn't like the extra dots that denoted that there was multiple phases. That's the thing that didn't resonate.
Okay, we're gonna get into a debate now. Okay, how would you have done it? Just kind of had like less health tick off.
Ooh, you're gonna put me in the diner chair. I love it.
Here's your interview. Let's see.
So I think what I would do. I think you still have the normal health bar. I think you still have it. You know, drain at the normal rate. I think it's just. I think you kind of go, and I don't know, it's kind of basic, but I think it's once you hit that, once the gauge is fully depleted, it kind of triggers that kind of cutscene. Like a lot of games have done stuff. Yeah. So it's kind of basic.
You just didn't want the foreshadowing of, oh, I'm going to have three things.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the big thing for me is just like, I wanted it to be kind of a surprise. That like when I got to like the Martin Lee fight, I was like, okay, I would have loved to have multiple phases. So that's just kind of my, with my design
here. I'll pay for that.
No, for sure. I'll send you a DM with my resume.
I mean, if it helps, I didn't even notice the dots.
But a lot of people.
It was a surprise for me.
You know what? Some people forget the dots too. I know, it's okay.
So we're running out of time here, but I want to ask you just sort of.
Man, this went fast, man. This is great. Great questions.
I mean, thanks for coming.
Of course.
Fun to talk to you about this. Before we go, I want to know, is there anything specifically in the game that you and the team are just really, really proud of that you just want people to keep a lookout for? Like, we've seen how fast you can move through the city. We've seen the graphics are incredible. Gameplay is really fun. Is there anything that's just sort of just subtle that took a lot of work that you'd like to shout out?
I wrote a letter to the people who reviewed it, right? I wrote a little letter just to kind of talk about it. And I almost basically begged people, please do the quests in the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man app and the ones related to Brooklyn Visions Academy. Those little stories really mean a lot to me because it shows the world doesn't need to be ending or a giant sand person in order to be a hero. And I hope that those are really, they're not the longest things in the world. They could be 10 minutes long, sometimes 15 minutes, but it shows that a hero is, you gotta be a hero at all times and for all different people. And I hope that like, whether it's the Miles helping out the fellow students of Brooklyn Visions, Peter talking to Howard.
That mission tears.
Real quick story. That mission was created by a designer named Brian Matheson, who actually is also the designer of the Sandman mission. And it was created during a game jam before one holiday break. And he did it like in two, three days. And we all saw it and we go, that needs to be in the game.
It's
great, right?
The music kicked in. I was just like, oh God, I know it's leading to it. I can't control it.
So that's an example of something that was never planned. Team did something that was amazing. We go, we're putting that in. If that means we have to give something else up, we're going to do it because that's probably better than anything else. So I would just say for me, the thing I'm really proud of is those little interactions that lead to some fun little stories that show another side of what Pete and Miles do on a day-to-day basis.
Man, I really love that side mission. I'd like right as it started, I was like, I should have saved here so I can replay just this mission. Yeah. It was the most beautiful, swinging mission I've played in
great.
The series.
That's awesome.
Comic books are little stories, you know?
It's
friendly neighborhood interactions that really kind of make it. Speaking of which, thank you for these interactions and these little stories.
Thanks.
It's been a pleasure having you come by.
It was fun.
Everybody watching, listening at home, please go play some Spider-Man. Presumably you already did play it, but maybe go, clean up some
more
icons on your map. On that note, there's a little word we like to say at the end of the show, which is actually in the title of the next Spider-Man movie, but it's a one, a two, a three, beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.